Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. A teacher lecturing before a group of students is a form of human interaction that stretches back at least a millennium and a half.
The roles are clear. The teacher with the knowledge tells the students who lack it everything they need to know.
The teacher projects, the student absorbs. The teacher speaks, the students listen.
But just because it's been that way for a long time doesn't mean it's the best way to teach. Our next guest today says we've been teaching all wrong for the past 1,500 years. He says he has a better way, and it's catching on. Eric Mazur is a physics professor at Harvard. Last month, he won a $500,000 prize for his development of what he calls peer instruction, and he joins me now in the studio. Professor Mazur, thank you for coming on to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me here.
And listeners, we are eager to hear from you during this conversation. We want you to listen to Professor Mazur's new approach to teaching and let us know if you think it could make teaching and learning better. Think back to your own college days sitting in a lecture hall. Did you learn from it? Could you have learned better? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Professor Mazur, you know, education is constantly studied. There are always new ideas to radicalize it, to change it. So I wonder if some people think, yet another idea. But you're really advocating a major rethink in the relationship between teacher and student, professor and student. So tell us how you think that role works now and how it needs to flip, in a sense.
Sure. Well, I mean, two things about the introduction that you just made. You were talking about interaction. But in a standard lecture, there is no interaction. It's basically simply the lecturer, which is Latin for the reader, delivering information that is in the 21st century is available in many different ways. And you only have to look at children to see that learning, that we're programmed to learn in a very different way. I mean, you don't give a lecture to little children about how to tie their shoelaces or how to put their fork in their mouth.
They would sit still for three seconds and learn by doing.
Yeah, and I urge anybody who's listening to this program to think about something they're really, really good at and asking themselves, where did I learn that? Did I learn that by sitting in a lecture listening to somebody tell me about it? Or did I learn it by doing? And I think, you know, we humans, we're really wired to learn by doing.
So what needs to change in the classroom?
What needs to change is that this medieval approach that survives from before the book was invented needs to move to something that's a little bit more engaging, that puts the focus on the students rather than on the teacher. You know, if you ask yourself, if you step into any lecture and you ask yourself, what is it exactly that is happening here? I think one is led pretty quickly to the conclusion that what is happening is a transfer of information. I mean, it's a lecturer divulging information. Some could say knowledge, but knowledge is something that really needs to be constructed in the head of the learner to students. But education is so much more. You need to have an aha moment. You need to have time to think. You need to have time to do something with that information that is transferred.
So your method is called peer instruction. The students become more engaged, not just with the teacher, but with each other.
Exactly. So I tend to think of education as a two-step process. One is the information transfer. Two is making sense of that information. In a standard lecture, all of the emphasis is on the information transfer, and the student has to make sense of it on his or her own. What I advocate is let's use other means to transfer the information, the book, the internet, video, whatever, and then let's use class time to make sense of that information.
And we should note here that you probably should share a personal story from the classroom, which is that you have really been a very celebrated teacher. You get wonderful reviews. Consistently, your students would say he's a great teacher. But you had a sort of crisis, a professional crisis, because you discovered that despite all these glowing reviews, some of your students were coming away from your classes not understanding some of the basics of physics. So talk about that moment you had when you thought something's not working despite my accolades.
Absolutely. I know that I can pinpoint the very instant that that happened. It was after 7 years of teaching at Harvard and believing that I was the world's best physics teacher, only to discover one day that the students had indeed not grasped the most simple, basic concept in my course. And I basically asked a very simple question about it. And then one student raised her hand and she said, Professor Mazur, How should I answer this question? According to what you taught us, or according to the way I usually think about these
Your
things?
Your heart must have fallen when the student said that.
Well, at first I had no idea what she was talking about, and then it dawned on me that, you know, she had really not internalized the most basic principle I had been trying to teach. And it was not just her. It was the entire class.
And in terms of the basic principles, I think it's actually worth noting, you had talked about sort of collision. There was an example of if a very heavy car, like a truck, hits a lighter car. Explain what that basic is that the student didn't
get. Sure. So the question basically dealt with a collision between a heavy truck and a light car, and comparing the forces exerted by either object on the other, the heavy truck on the car versus the car on the truck. And all students in my course knew how to recite Newton's third law. The force exerted by object 1 on object 2 is the same as that exerted by object 2 on object 1. But if you replace 1 by heavy truck and 2 by light car, apparently they forgot all about Newton's third law.
And they thought that the heavy truck exerted more
force.
And Newton
on
says
it.
That's not the case.
Exactly.
So this was very crushing to you. And you came up with a new way that has students interacting among themselves. And I have to tell you that when I first heard about this, I was a little skeptical because I thought, I can think of many times in elementary school, middle school, high school, when the teachers basically said, talk amongst yourselves. So to me, it didn't feel revolutionary. So tell me what's different unless my teachers had sort of adopted what you were already promoting.
I doubt it. And I think, you know, it basically goes back all the way to Socrates, right, who said we should teach by questioning, not by telling. And you're totally right. I think in elementary school, in kindergarten, of course, it's done interactively with kids teaching each other. Somewhere in middle school, high school, the transition occurs to lecture. So basically what I do is I teach by questioning. I ask a question. I ask students to commit to an answer to the question on their own, without talking to anyone. And after they've committed themselves, I have them try, they have to find somebody who has a different answer and try to convince that person that they're right and the other person is wrong.
Find another student with an opposing view and persuade
exactly.
them why you're right and they're wrong.
Exactly. And it's in the articulation of thinking that, of course, the learning happens. And the aha moment, you have students going to class, oh, I never thought about it that way. So now, instead of the aha moment occurring outside of the classroom, it happens inside the
classroom.
So
by basically pushing your students to articulate their thought process, they have to basically take on the professor role and explain to another student. It helps them think through out loud and then understand better in the process.
Absolutely. Who is the person who learns the most in any classroom? It's the teacher. Therefore, make the students the teacher, under the guidance, of course, of another teacher, me.
I'm speaking with Eric Mazur. He's a professor of physics at Harvard University, and he's come up with a new way of teaching which kind of throws out the window the traditional college lecture where students sit passively and professors talk. He proposes peer instruction in which students interact and hopefully teach one another. We already have some. We'd like to hear from you, and our number is 1-800-423-8255. Let us know what your own college experience was like. Do you think that if you had been forced to persuade the student next to you of a complicated theory you were being taught, would you have learned better? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We already have some callers on the board, so let me go to some of them because I think many people want to speak with you. First one is Kailash calling from Weston. And tell us what you think about what you're hearing here.
Thanks so much for taking my call. Kudos to Eric. I think this is a topic that is long overdue in the public discourse. And as a parent of two teenagers, one to be a teenager soon, a 17-year-old and a 13-year-old, I can see how lectures bore them to tears in classrooms. And, you know, particularly subjects like physics and biology. I'm a physicist myself. And to see the inability of teachers to explain simple concepts, not because of their lack of understanding, but because students are so bored that they completely tune out. At home, I supplement by what Eric's talking about, essentially asking them lots of questions and, you know, conducting various science experiments in our own kitchen or in the garage. And the difference is palpable. You can actually see them get it. Newton's first law, they get it. The second law, they get it. When they actually see themselves doing the experiment as opposed to being.
Kailash, that's a great observation. Eric Mazur, it sounds like Kailash should be your teaching assistant. He advocates your idea.
We should be teaching together even better. I totally agree. And you know, I mean, I think every parent knows that. I mean, parents don't lecture their children. They know that lecturing has the opposite effect. It's a dialogue. Teaching, learning is a dialogue.
We have another caller. This is Brian from Holden. And Brian, your thoughts on this new approach to thinking that Professor Mazur is proposing?
Well, I've taught in a couple of school systems in the Boston area, and what I found is I teach high school math. And what I find is that in a lot of the more progressive classrooms, there is already this movement towards students creating ideas and trying to, you know, create their thinking with other students. And it's a little bit less about the teacher and more about the student, the idea of student-centered learning. What I do run into often is this pushback from students who have been told by their parents, go to school and learn and do exactly what the teacher tells you to and think exactly how they tell you to think. And so when there is an interactive part of the lesson, when there's a time for the students to work with each other, their idea and their response is, well, I don't know what that idea is because I haven't been taught it yet. And so I was just wondering, you know, as much as this, my impression is a lot of people will think about what the message that you're saying is, the way that we are teaching is in dire need of change, which I do agree, but I'm wondering, where does the responsibility of learning go between the teacher and the student? Where does the student need to pick up the pieces and work for themselves as to how they should really understand the material?
It's a good point, Brian, because if the student sort of isn't ready to have that student-to-student conversation, it could be wasted time. So, Professor Mazur, what about that risk?
Well, we're in the same boat. I get exactly the same pushback. You know, early on in my career, people were saying, oh, Professor Mazur is lecturing straight from his lecture notes. I never get that anymore, but now I get, Professor Mazur is not teaching us anything. We have to learn it all ourselves. And, you know, by the time you get your students and I get mine, they've already been preconditioned by years of passive lecturing. And that's what they consider to be teaching and therefore learning. So it's not easy to change the teaching. But in terms of the responsibility, I thought you brought up lots of many good points there. In terms of responsibility, ultimately, you know, all the teacher can do is be sort of a coach, induce the students to learn. The responsibility for learning ultimately is squarely on the learner. And just lecturing, you know, may sort of hide all the dirt under the rug, but it's not really engendering any meaningful and deep learning.
And Professor Mazur, we should point out here that when you have your students basically interact among themselves, it's not as if you just become passive and you sit there and flip through your computer. You're out there as what you describe eavesdropping, listening in and hopefully guiding and facilitating conversations.
And learning how my students are reasoning.
Exactly. Another caller, this is Joe calling from Charlestown. And Joe, I understand you're a middle school social studies teacher?
Yes, I am.
What do you think about this idea?
I love the idea. You know, I just got done with my master's degree at Boston University, and they taught a lot about this, how to get away from the lecture, have the students talk to each other, come up with these aha moments. And it's a really great idea. You know, I implement in the classroom whenever I can. However, last Friday, you had a program on discussing how this turn to just testing the students, making sure that they get all this information, and then social studies, you know, we have a lot of information. You know, my middle school students have to cover from ancient Mesopotamia to ancient Rome in 1 year. And so my question is, what do you suggest for this balance between, you know, getting the information out there, making sure that they acquire the skills and the information to succeed, but at the same time allowing them to teach themselves and come up with these aha moments?
So 2 points. I think another absolutely excellent point. In fact, you'll be pleased to know that the new talk that I've launched a couple of months ago, and I'm quite proud of it, has the title Assessment, the Silent Killer of Learning. You know, and you can find it on YouTube. I had always thought, you know, we need to change our approach to teaching, but we just as equally need to change our approach to assessment, because the assessment is what ultimately is going to determine our students' success. And it's also the metric by which you and I are going to be judged as teachers. So the good news is that research has shown that if you teach students to think for themselves, they'll actually end up doing better on traditional assessment as well.
Well, and you actually have found quantifiable improvements when you use this kind of teaching instead. This is not just a theory that you think it works. You're seeing results.
Oh, yes. I mean, I'm a physicist. I go by data. I knew I was never going to convince my colleagues if I did not have solid, indisputable, irrefutable data. So I've always made sure that I had data before I, you know, came out with an idea.
And Professor Mazur, I love that we have callers who are pushing back a little. I want to bring on another one who is a bit skeptical, and this is Kate calling from the Back Bay. And Kate, I'm interested in your thoughts about this.
Yes, hi. I'm very happy to hear the professor speak. I have two comments. The first one, we've been teaching this way for years. I teach at the Whistler Public School. And one of the things we teach our students is to take responsibility for their learning.
And Kate, what level do you teach in the Worcester Public Schools?
K to six.
K to six, okay.
Yes. So this is one thing. We teach cooperative learning. We're always asking, what is it you are doing? Why are you doing it? And if we see someone struggle, we always pair them with somebody. The second part is I am very happy to see that universities now are using a similar system, if you want to call it that. And how did the professor do, and where did he go to win such, $500,000 or the prize for his idea? We would love something for our hard work as well.
Well, in response to your first point, we have a lot to learn from you. I will never deny that. And when you look at K through six or maybe K through five, I mean, it is, of course, it's interactive because, you know, that's how we're born. We're born to learn by doing. I don't know where the transition exactly happens. By the time they come to me in higher education, you know, they're already so stuck in memorizing by rote and passive listening in the lecture that it's very, very difficult to change. Now, as for your second point, I was totally surprised myself by both the magnitude of this prize and the fact that there was a prize in the first place. It's a prize that's specifically allocated to higher education. I totally agree. There should be many more like this for all levels of education, because if anything can be said about education, it's a seed for the future generation. There is no more important task to be done.
And the prize that Professor Mazur won is called the Minerva Prize for Advancements in Higher Education. That's what came with that nice chunk of money. We have another caller from Medfield, and this is Norma. And Norma, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Hi, Professor Mazur. I've heard of your work, and it's not a brand new idea to me. It's very exciting to me. I actually teach college writing, and the typical model is, students read examples of great writing, and then they write. I don't think that the peer editing that we usually do, I don't think it's effective, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on a writing class with peer instruction.
And if I could broaden that out a bit, I'm wondering if you feel like this applies to every subject and every discipline. You teach physics, yes. Do you think it's also social studies, English? Is there any subject in which this doesn't apply or would apply differently?
Yeah. So I mean, when I developed this, the thought never came up in my mind, I'm going to revolutionize education. I had a problem to solve in my class, right? And then when I saw how well it worked, I wrote a book, and the book spread the idea in physics. And now 22 years later, there are many people in other disciplines who are using it. The first surprise came about 10 years ago when I was giving a talk on peer instruction at Strathclyde University in Glasgow. And after my talk, a woman walked up to me and she said, "Oh, I bought your book and I used your method in my class." I'm always worried then for a moment, because I thought, oh, maybe it doesn't work. But it worked beautifully. I said, what do you teach? And she said, French drama.
Oh, very different from physics,
and
obviously.
And I said, French drama? I mean, I could never have imagined using it. But then let's face it. I mean, it's not only in physics that you need to think. When you write, you need to think. When you do French drama, you need to think. When you veterinary medicine, I mean, any field that involves the development of a mental model or some kind of interpretation or any type of critical thinking lends itself to it, because it puts the student in the position of actually using those skills. Therefore, yes, in your writing class, by all means, I mean, have the student, rather than telling the students this is good and this is bad, let them become part of the discussion and the articulation of the ideas.
You know, Professor Mazur, as I think through what it must have been like for you as you altered the way you taught, you were basically putting the responsibility on the students to think through the process. And I wonder if in the process you learned as well, because certainly once we know things, it's hard to go back and think of what it was like before we knew it. But has it returned you in a way to an earlier stage of your learning process?
Absolutely. It's what my colleague Steven Pinker calls the curse of knowledge, right? Once you know something, all of a sudden it becomes simple, the difficulties go away. And by actually being forced to to listen to your student, you rediscover the difficulties that, you know, have melted away, have gone away. And on many occasions, students will ask follow-up questions, which they normally would never do, which make me think. So, yes, absolutely. In fact, I dedicate my book to my students who taught me how to teach and how to learn, basically.
Can you think of the most revelatory thing that you've learned in recent years based on throwing the problem out to the students and hearing them talk it through?
Well, I don't know of any specific example off the top of my head, but very often I'm confronted with holes in my own thinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, it happens so frequently that I'm not even surprised by it anymore.
And they help fill in the gaps.
Absolutely.
I want to go to one more caller, and this is Todd calling from Weston. Hi, Todd. Thanks for calling the show.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So I wanted to point out, first of all, I'm just thrilled to hear this topic being discussed on the station. I wanted to point out that I agree with the previous caller that it's not a new form of education at all. It's actually been a radical form of education in progressive models, elementary and high school, for example, for decades. I love the point that you made about assessment being the killer of education. I think that's right on, because assessment is a kind of an end point, but reflection is something that is quite alive. I operate out of the idea that no learning is complete without reflection, regardless of what the impetus, where the impetus for what to learn emanates. And when I say that, I mean to point out that I try to create situations for my students to tell me what they would like to learn, and then I act as a conduit. And there are times where I need to present brand new information that I would like everyone to see or hear or experience in some way. And so whether the impetus to, when you walk through the door, if the impetus for what to learn is emanating from the teacher, that's one form. Another form is when as a teacher I wait for the I want. I love when a student says, I want, or I'm curious. And then when you hear information from this point of view, it doesn't really matter from whence the idea for what to learn emanates. What matters is at the end of the project, at the end of the doing.
Todd, thank you for that. That's a great point. I'm not going to leave you much time to answer this, Professor Mazur, but a quick question, hopefully a quick answer. You've heard many people supportive of this idea. Do you get pushback, professors resisting this idea? Can you answer that in 20 seconds or so?
Of course, and students resisting it too. And again, it comes back to what we just heard, the assessment, because ultimately it's the assessment that drives students' behavior more than anything else that happens in the classroom.
That's Professor Eric Mazur. He's a physics professor at Harvard University. Last month, he won $500,000 Minerva Prize for his technique peer instruction. Thank you so much for coming into the studio.
My pleasure.
And stay with us. Coming up, the warm weather has returned, like today's beautiful day, and so have ticks. They're the subject of this week's Common Health segment. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.